welcome to the 17th episode of Deep Dive. I am Raul Rosica, senior here at Syracuse University, studying health and exercise science on the pre-physical therapy track. I go by Rudy, and today on this episode we have Karen McKinkle. She's a school certified official. Today she's going to talk about benefits, how to certify for school, and little tips and tricks on how to separate from the military using benefits. How are you doing today, Carrie?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So to start off, I would like to see talk about what did you do in the military, what branch you were, and how did you end up in Syracuse?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was in the Marine Corps for 5 years. I was military police, so I will be judged automatically off the bat. But I was field side the whole time, so I was just, you know, in the field and doing field ops for 5 years. And Syracuse, I have been born and raised. I was born in Syracuse and then grew up 45 minutes north of here. So I did my undergraduate here, did everything a little backwards, got my bachelor's first, and then enlisted in the military. So I just came back after I got done and loved being here. So that's all she wrote, and just came back and never left.
I'm sure you got a lot of flack in the military for going enlisted with the degree.
I had to be waivered because my tattoo on my wrist was not within, it had to be more than 2 inches. So they conveniently would waiver it to go enlisted, but not to go officer side. So,
yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'll start off, like, there's when people go into the military at boot camp, they meet as enlisted, they make you sign up for, or they don't make you, but they encourage you to sign up for the Montgomery bill. Mm-hmm. It's $100. When I went in, it was $100 a month for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about how this allows you another opportunity.
Yep.
Can you explain the differences between post 9/11 GI Bill and the Montgomery benefits?
Yeah, absolutely. I had the same problem when I was going in 2012. They were getting to a point where you could pick, which at that point you're under stress. You don't know what you're doing anyways, you know. You just pick the one that sounds better, and it's post 9/11, 100%. So the difference is Montgomery pays directly to the student, and it doesn't pay that much. I just look just to see what the numbers are because we don't track them because we don't see them when we certify students. On full-time status, active duty, you're getting about $2,335 a month, give or take. And that's, so say you're in 12 credits and you're doing that. That's not a lot, especially at a private university like Syracuse. That's really not that much. Versus post 9/11, you're getting full tuition and mandatory fees coming directly to the university. On top of that, you're getting that roughly $1,600 a month for housing allowance, and then you're getting your $1,000 per year book stipend. Montgomery GI Bill, I know that once you, if you're eligible for both, once you exhaust Montgomery or exhaust post 9/11, you can get your kickers back that you paid into it.
By kicker, you mean the $1,000?
Yep, what you paid into it for Montgomery, so you have to exhaust post 9/11 first. So that's the main difference between the two, is one gives you a lot more money than the other one does.
But would the Montgomery benefits be better for people who separate from the military and want to go straight to, like, a trade school, like 6-month trade school or something? Like,
yeah, you could definitely do that.
Like in that scenario, which one would be better?
It depends on the school and if the program's approved. Like, I'm always going to say post 9/11 is better just because it pays out more. Because even if Montgomery is being used at a school that's not charging as much, you're still getting more through post 9/11 because Montgomery, I mean, it might end up being more. It really just depends on the situation, like if you're not being charged anything and they're still paying you out. But Montgomery, when you report it, if you're on active duty, how this is in the weeds on our side. If a student is on active duty, we have to report tuition and fees to the VA, and then they pay out based off of, like, a number of different factors. If a student is not on active duty and is using Montgomery, then we don't have to do that. And it also goes in if you're under 50% or 75% rate of pursuit. So at 12 credits, if you're in 9 credits or less, then we have to report tuition and fees for that, too. Whereas post 9/11, we always have to report tuition and fees because they pay it all.
Okay.
So it really depends on the school, how much you're being charged. Like, it's a number of factors. That's why, I mean, you hear this all the time when we go to events. You know, the Office of Veteran Success is like, please come see us with any questions that you have. And it's because everything is so in the weeds that it's really about your specific situation, what you're looking to get out of it, and things like that. So, Okay. I didn't really answer you, but it's vague, but it really just depends on the situation in the school.
Yeah, because I guess when I was getting out, the main thing was, like, if you are going to a short-term school, use Montgomery. If you're going to a traditional four-year school, use GI Bill, but you put a little more clarity into it.
Yeah, the GI Bill is definitely more beneficial at a four-year institution. And, I mean, you think about, like, we have Onondaga Community College. That's typically state tuition, too. So I've seen some students use it there, but they don't necessarily need to. They might get other grants and benefits that they can save that entitlement. We do have students that have done that when they transfer in here. So it really, it all depends on where you go. And the VA has bumped up a lot of other programs. In the last couple of years, like, they have a vet tech program that is really beneficial for trade schools and smaller schools that don't charge as much and operate on experience hours versus credit hours. So they've changed a lot since, you know, we were first going in back in the day, so.
All right. Also, like, is there a difference of benefits that, like, a National Guard service member could use versus, like, traditional, like, Navy, Army, Marine branch, like?
Yeah, so a lot of it is dependent on your time in service, and when I say time in service, I mean active duty. I mean, we know people that have been in the reserves or National Guard for 20-plus years, and they still don't have as much benefit entitlement as we do after 4 years on active duty. So that's how the VA calculates all their entitlement, is on active duty, and after like 3 years, you get full benefits. So it really depends on how much time you have in. If you've deployed, they count all that time as active duty. Training, they still don't count that as being on active duty. So we see some students that are in the Guard or the reserves using benefits like 1606, that's another one that pays a stipend directly to the students like Chapter 30 does.
So let's say someone has 60% of the GI Bill. What does that mean?
So how the VA has come to that number is their time on active duty. So they have this little calculation that they do with students to see how many days they've been on active duty. And if you remember what your certificate of eligibility looked like, it'll have the dates right on that main page of when you started and when you ended. And they do the number of days that you were on active duty at the end. I think like the traditional is over 1,800 days. So that's how they determine what your percentage is. Some students, if you're in the reserve and you start out at a certain percentage, like 60%, if you're still in and you go on orders, active duty orders, they could potentially bump your eligibility up. So I've seen students go from 60 to 70 and then maybe 90, depending on how much time they do.
What does that mean, though? Does 60% of 100 mean they had a full GI Bill for 60% of the time? Or does it mean, like, they get the full GI Bill but only 60% of the tuition or 60% of the monthly stipend?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and I'm going to hurt your brain with this because it hurts my brain on a regular basis with the math that I have to do every day. So each eligibility tier has a cap amount that the VA will pay. So you're familiar with 100%. You're also eligible for Yellow Ribbon because Syracuse costs so much that we put that out there for students. At 90%, you're no longer eligible for Yellow Ribbon, so you still have a cap. Each tier has a cap. So what that 60% is saying is that based off of this amount, and they do the 60% based off of the 100% cap, so 100% cap for this year is $27,120.05. So 60% of that, I think it's roughly around 18 something, I have it on my whiteboard. But so each term, we have to calculate the tuition and fees that we submit to the VA. We look at how much that the VA will pay out based off of that. So undergraduate students, most of them, like if they're at 60%, they're gonna hit that cap in the fall semester because Syracuse is charging you so much. Our our online students, they might not hit that cap right away. So what we have to do for that, and this is, I don't like it that it's set up this way, but this is how the VA does it, is my logic when I first started would think that if a student is only being charged $5,000, they're under that $18,000 cap, that they're going to get that $5,000. That's not how the VA operates at the lower eligibility tiers. What we have to do then is $5,000, we have to take 60% of that, and that's what the student is getting. So the student, if they're not 100%, is always going to have a gap on coverage, which drives me insane because I'm like, if you have that cap and they're not being charged a full amount, then give it to them, but that's not the case.
What else do kind of blew my mind a little bit right now?
No, I'm sorry.
In terms of a service member is not yellow ribbon eligible if they're not 100% GI Bill.
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that.
That's
a fun fact.
And they actually just changed it. So you have to be, prior to August 2022 is when the VA changed it. The previous stipulations for yellow ribbon, and these were set up by the VA, we just have an agreement that if we pay it out, that they'll pay it out. But you couldn't be on active duty to receive yellow ribbon. So you could be 100%, but if you're on active duty, you weren't getting yellow ribbon. So you might still have a gap. You couldn't be using a transfer entitlement. So if you were a spouse, you couldn't be using transfer entitlement from an active duty member. So as of August 2022, the VA wiped that all away. So now our active duty members and their spouses, as long as they're 100% eligible, they can receive yellow ribbon too.
So what tips do you recommend for service members? They know I'm getting out. They have some time before they separate. They're on terminal leave or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. How should they prepare as far as like benefits go?
For transferring, do you talk about to coming to school?
Yeah, going to school, like traditional four-year school.
I would say if they're coming to a four-year school and they're dead set on they know what they want to do, then 100% four-year school is their thing. I would say from my own personal experience, it just being an 18-year-old and being clueless about life or even transitioning out of the military, I know some students that, you know, they kind of flounder in the best way I can say that when they get out. And, you know, we've talked about this as you kind of lose your identity once you get out of the military. And so that may involve not knowing what you want to do once you get out. I would push community college first, and that's just to get the electives out of the way and say that this is done. And, you know, I will always talk very highly of OCC because we have a great...
And OCC is a local community college here in Syracuse?
Yes, Onondaga Community College. They are phenomenal with their support staff. We have worked closely with them over the years. So they're very good at what they do with veterans. And then if you're just 100% going straight into a four-year institution, I would say as soon as you know where you're going or even just exploring options, get acquainted with who your certifying officials are at the schools, because different universities, we all do it differently. Like, we are very fortunate at Syracuse to have our own veterans space. Not every school is like that. Some schools, like our office, used to operate out of financial aid before, you know, OVMA started, and we were pulled under OVMA, the Office of Veteran and Military Affairs. So some schools are housed under financial aid. Some schools are housed under the registrar's office. And if they're smaller schools, then they have other responsibilities along with certifying. I'm lucky enough that I just have certifying along with whatever the VA throws at us for that. Not everyone is that lucky. So my biggest tip is get acquainted with who your certifying officials are at that school that you're looking at. Even if you don't end up going there, I know I've talked to students
that... You're saying, so like while they're still active, email them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hey, let me just talk to them?
Yeah, I've absolutely had that happen before, whether, you know, it's current students making connections with people that they know or just students like, hey, I'm looking at coming to Syracuse. I'm not dead set on it. Like, the majority that I see in that realm is parents that are looking and their student, their child hasn't decided yet, but there's no harm in...
Are you saying parents? Are you saying like parents of service member?
Yeah. So the parents are the service member and then their child is usually
the parents are calling for like...
No. So, I mean, we have that too. We had law school students that were father and daughter a couple years ago that they were using... benefits at the same time and going through the College of Law, so that was pretty cool. But no, the parents that transfer their entitlement over to their dependents, a lot of times they want to make those connections ahead of time and just figure out if they're, you know, there's scholarships that the students are eligible for. A lot of times, like I know Syracuse, you may not be as eligible for tuition-specific scholarships because you're at 100%, and some of our scholarships are need-based. But we do have scholarships that aren't like that. So getting acquainted with that, knowing what you may be eligible for otherwise, like we have the Veterans Housing Grant that is phenomenal here that you get, you know, $1,500.
A semester is fantastic.
Each semester, yeah. So $3,000 to help out with that. And they do that because they know that your housing allowance isn't coming along the same time frame with, you know, rent might be due or if you're living on campus, things like that. So they try to help out that way.
I will say, so I did go to community college.
Yeah.
And for a service member, if they do go to community college, I would say definitely look ahead and what school you want to go to. And what are the requirements? Because something that blew my mind, at Syracuse only requires like 6 transfer credits, something like very little.
Yeah.
So I went to community college for 2 years and then no research. I was like, all right, this is normal. We'll come in 2 years and I'll transfer out. But that was one of the dumbest things that I think I ever did.
Yeah.
Because I wasted 2 years of GI Bill at my community college.
Yeah.
So if I had to go back and let's say your grades weren't the best in high school and you still want to go to a 4-year school and you had to go to community college, if you have the funds to pay out of pocket or through the Pell Grant or through any other type of grant, because community college is generally really cheap, do not waste the GI Bill.
Absolutely.
Because it was just, I was like, that was the plan. Like, you know, get out, go to school, use GI Bill, and I followed my plan, but my plan was flawed. But luckily it worked out for me, but I would say any service members that need to go to community college, definitely look ahead. What are their credits at your 4-year school you want to go to? And then do that. Just do that. Because when I transferred here, I lost a whole semester. They didn't accept like 12 or 13 credits for me. Mm-hmm. So that sent me back a whole academic year. Because really, I should be starting grad school. I should have started this fall.
Yeah.
And so I pushed my whole life back essentially 1 year because I lost a semester. And in the grand scheme of life, a year is not too bad. But it's still like I would start working a year earlier. And you know, it would have, my eyes would probably have been a little better. But it all worked out. And so I would just say, like, definitely look ahead. If you don't have to use the GI Bill, save it. Yeah. And then if you're there for a year or two, you can now use the GI Bill for grad school. Mm-hmm. You go to your 4-year school for 2 years, and then the other 2 years eligibility, you can use it for grad school, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we see students that have never used it before, even if they're going straight for 4 years, like, you're still going to have a little bit of time left because you're getting 36 months. And we typically tell students that you're using 3.5 months of entitlement if you are at, you know, full-time. Syracuse has that sweet spot of 12 to 19 credits. You're considered full-time and you get that flat rate. So you're still having a little bit of time left. It's like 8 months. But yeah, definitely plan ahead. Like you said, that's a great point because how many students have I talked to just recently that are like, I kind of got screwed over coming here and, you know, I had these transfer credits and they didn't transfer in. I will say that there will be a better plan going forward for transfer credits because it's not universal across the university. But yeah, definitely plan ahead. And the reason why I recommend community college first is if you don't know what you're doing and you go straight to 4 year, you're also wasting your GI Bill too because you could be floundering around for a while. I mean,
there are plenty of students here that change majors like 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, if they're getting their electives done while they're doing that and that works and everything's paid for. It's just, are you going to end up being here longer than you want to? And you're going to get burnout. And even if you just go to community college for like 1 or 2 semesters.
That's what I think. I think people should go to community college for like a year because I thought the classes were smaller. I had a lot of one-on-one time with professors. I knew them. Like, I don't want to say I'm on, like, a personal level, but, like, I knew them very, very well. Yeah. And they knew me, knew, like, my life. Because it was just a small classroom. The largest classroom, I only had one large classroom. That was, like, anatomy and physiology. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, a 200-person, like, lecture class. But all the other ones, like, 20 people. Mm-hmm. And I will also say something at my community college, I went to community college in California, to typically have less resources.
Yeah.
So what they did, they typically combined 2 classes in one. Mm-hmm. So I took organic chemistry and biochemistry in the same semester, like in the same class. So the first part of the semester was organic chemistry. The second part was biochemistry. It was insanely difficult. Mm-hmm. When I got here, they only counted it as organic chemistry. So essentially, I took biochemistry the second half for no reason. Yeah. Luckily, organic chemistry was the harder of the two. Uh-huh. So I have that on my transcript now, but like that's one of the, and it happened in like multiple scenarios for me.
Yeah.
And I just, I didn't, at the time, like, whatever, this is normal. And I got here like, well, that definitely was normal just because my community college didn't have enough money to pay more professors, or more professors don't want to work there for whatever reason. So there are the benefits of community college, but there are all the few down flaws would be lack of resources.
Yeah. And like you said, if you don't know if there's like a straight plan into the university that you're going into, like your transfer credits, like that just sucks.
No, yeah, it does.
It really does. And if you can know that ahead of time, like I said, hopefully going forward, our, you know, university will have a better way for students so that they're maximizing their benefits, that won't happen. But that just, that's rough.
Something I also want to speak about a little bit was at the bottom of our certificate of eligibility, which get a GI Bill, mm-hmm. which people have to apply for, right? The GI Bill certificate, once they get out.
Yeah, so you have to apply for your benefits, which is another hill that doesn't make sense to me. But
Can you just talk about it a little, because I feel some people don't even know that.
Yeah, so I will talk about both sides. I'll talk about the veteran side and then the dependent side, because it's kind of twofold. So on the veteran side, when you get out, you have to go onto the VA's website, whatever benefit you're planning on using, you have to apply for that benefit. And then the VA will come back and tell you that you're eligible for that. Like, for example, post 9/11, this is what you're eligible for. This is how much entitlement you have remaining. And then they used to have a delimiting date. And what that was you had 15 years to use post 9/11. So we have people that, probably my age, because I went in a little bit late, that their benefits are gone because they went in, you know, right out of high school, and 15 years they didn't use them, or they did use them, but they're exhausted. So that's the process on the veteran side. They're changing their process now, so they're doing this thing called the digital GI Bill, but they're still like, it's not all the way there. But they're doing like instantaneous decisions. So it used to be 30 to 45 days, they'd send you hard copy, this is your certificate of eligibility. Now they're saying that once you apply for them, you can get an instant decision. From what I'm
always hearing, yes, though, right?
Depending on your entitlement. Your time in service. So we've had students that apply that think that they're eligible for something, and they're really not because they don't have the time in service.
Which is 2 years, right, active duty?
Yeah, so after 2 years is a minimum of when you could be eligible for the bottom tier, and then you have to keep adding up after that. So at 36 months, I believe, is when you should be eligible for the full amount of post 9/11. And then on the dependent side, so what has to happen with that is the VA calls it the sponsor, but it's basically the parent that served. They have to transfer the benefits over while they're still on active duty, because that is the worst conversation that I will have with parents, is that they want to transfer it over, but they're retired and they can't do it anymore.
I hate that rule.
Yeah.
Luckily, like, you know, I was never in that situation, but like just hearing other people, like, that's terrible.
Yeah. And when I was getting out, they were increasing the amount of time you had to be on active duty in order to be able to transfer the benefits.
It's something ridiculous. Like, you needed like 7 years and the 10 years remaining or something ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
That.
Like, you had to, I think it was increasing to like 10 or 15 years when I was getting out. And then if you were at that mark, you still had to sign on for another 4 years to be able to still do that.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. So on that side, that's what they have to do. So the parent has to transfer the entitlement over. So we've seen parents that'll just transfer 1 month over just to like each dependent, because once they do that, then they can switch stuff around. So they can switch it around after the fact, as long as they've done the transfer while they were on active duty. So they've done the transfer, the dependent, the child, or the spouse still has to go and apply for the benefits, even though the transfer has been completed.
Mm.
So you think about it, it's the same thing with us as veterans. Like, the benefits are in our name, but we still have to apply for them. So that's where a lot of parents get caught up, is they're like, I initiated the transfer. Like, okay, you got through step one, good job. Now you still have step two, where the student has to apply, and it has to be in their information, because parents will also apply for the benefits with their own information, and then that gets kicked back and gets denied.
Wow.
Usually because they've transferred all the benefits out. So that's what that looks like on those sides.
And see, this podcast is beneficial for everybody. Not just people going to school, people want to transfer their kids.
Yeah.
20 years.
Yep. Yeah. And it'll
deep dive.
It'll make your head spin.
Yeah. So moving on to the next question. At the bottom of certificate eligibility, from what I hear, there's a scholarship at the bottom. I, like many service members, had no idea that was there.
Yep.
Until last semester I heard about it. Can you explain about it or speak about it?
Yeah. Are you talking the Edith, like, Rogers? It should be a STEM scholarship, if I remember correctly, because I haven't seen it in a while. So the STEM scholarship it was started off as a pilot, like, a few years ago. I think it was around the time that I started in 2018. And so what it did was students that were in a STEM field, they could apply to basically have their benefits extended. So within 180 days of you running out of benefits, you could apply for the STEM scholarship and they would award you like an extra $30,000 in benefits. You would still get a housing allowance, you'd still get tuition fees, but that was the most that they would award you. So some students, it really wasn't beneficial. Go ahead. I see you want to ask the question.
So, but like for people like me who went to community college first, that would have been amazing because I was on my last like 3 weeks and I knew I had to finish everything this semester of like the fall 2023.
Yeah.
Or else I would be done. Luckily, I got into VRNE, which is an amazing program as well. But like, so people who in that predicament, that extra semester would have been like perfect. So that's really cool.
Yeah. So the caveat that I will have to that is something that the VA changed in the last couple years too, that I guess it's more beneficial if you're going to run out during a semester, because I've seen this happen and they do it with veterans and dependents now, is that say you go into the fall semester and you have 1 day of entitlement remaining, as long as you have 1 day going into that semester, they're going to pay out the full semester now. They didn't used to do that. So a lot of times it would leave veterans with a bill that maybe we couldn't always predict because the VA calculations, they kind of like hold those close. So it's hard to always advise students, and you know, students get upset with us sometimes because I'm like, you have to call the VA on this. Like I can give you hypotheticals, I can walk you through these scenarios, but at the end of the day, they're going to give you some really vague stuff because they won't do it until the certification is in the system. So that's the nice thing about that now is that they even put it on your COEs at the bottom. I have seen it now that they'll pay out the full semester. And they do that for dependents now, too. They didn't used to do that. But with dependents, the only caveat is it has to be the last remaining entitlement. So if you have 3 dependents, it has to be the person who uses the benefits last. So it's not going to be for every person. So child 1 and child 2 exhaust their benefits, like, have a nice day, you still have a bill halfway through the semester. Child 3 has the same scenario, they get that full semester paid out. So
that's funny. But that is amazing, amazing benefit the VA does, like, because I was like, man, I had 2 weeks, Gary, what do I do? And then like, that's when I learned that like, they'll pay out the rest of the semester. Like, that's like, feels like a whole relief.
Yeah. It is nice because they'll pay out the housing allowance too.
Yeah.
Like, they have you covered. And it's easier for us now because we know that if we don't get a full payment for a student, that A, there's either a problem or usually they're a dependent and there's still entitlement remaining either through the parent or another dependent has it. I love that they do that now because it makes our lives a lot easier, especially in, you know, a 4-year private school that is not cheap. It does make that nicer. And then going back to the STEM scholarship, I remember when it first started, a lot of students were applying for it because you have to apply through the VA. And then what they do on that side is they send us an email and we have to do a lot of their work for them. We have to give them what the program name is, what how many credits are required to complete it. And then you also, this is the other problem, is you also have to be, I want to say 80 to 90 credits into the program. Don't quote me on that. But you have to be a certain length into the program before they will approve you for it. So
I mean, at that point, if your JABL benefits are nearly exhausted, you probably are pretty close to being done.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the only thing I would say that you might not be in that situation is if you're bouncing around trying to figure out life and, you know.
That's when you go to community college first.
Yes, community college first.
Yeah. I gotta get it for at least one semester to two. I think that'd be a good point. Any other than that, you shouldn't be there.
Yeah, I agree too. And I just think, like, part of the reason why I tout it is, you know, I went into my undergraduate right from high school, and being an 18-year-old that thought I knew what I was doing, I quickly got here and found out that I didn't. And that was partially because I graduated with 85 students in my high school class.
Oh, wow.
So coming to Syracuse was a big difference. I discovered that if I didn't want to get on the bus, because I was living on South Campus, if I didn't want to get on the bus for an 8 a.m. class, I didn't have to. I mean, I had consequences after the fact, but I didn't have to do that. And then I started off as a dual major in the School of Ed, as I wanted to be a social studies teacher. And then I started student teaching out in Syracuse City School Districts. And going back to, I graduated with 80 people in my class. I came from predominantly, like, 99.9% of us were white. This Syracuse was a culture shock, and I've been here my whole life, but being in that with sixth graders who hated me was a culture shock. And being 18, I was like, I'm out, I can't do this. So that was when I figured out, like, I love teaching, I love doing that stuff, but I just needed to figure out a different avenue to do it in. Like, that wasn't the avenue for me. And if I had gone to a community college, I probably would have had better grades. I would have been able to figure that out.
Wow. So when the service members get, getting ready to separate and they want to go to school, what should they look at in the school when they pick one?
I would say,
as far as veteran benefits.
Yeah. So veteran benefits and what program you're looking for. So, I know we have, like, Newhouse, Whitman, they're all good schools. The, you know, school management or Newhouse, Scott Communications. Look at what program you want, how high value that is, and if there's a lot of jobs in that area. Because that's the other thing, is you don't want to waste your benefits on a job that you're not going to go into. Like, going back to my experience, I just did that with two master's degrees where, you know, I'm fully qualified in counseling, but I'm still, it helps for my job, but it's not, like, I'm not using that.
I guess you are counseling veterans on how to navigate benefits and education.
Yeah, or to don't do what I do, like, do the opposite of what I do. That's how I counsel people. So I would say look at the programs, look at the reputation of the school. I probably shouldn't say this on a podcast, but don't necessarily look at the GI Bill comparison tool. I know that the VA pushes that a lot, but it's not always accurate. Like, we've had
problems. Oh, really? I lived off that when I was
We've had deciding. So many problems within the past year of the GI Bill caps not being accurate. The housing allowance wasn't always accurate, and the housing allowance doesn't reflect grad students, so it's just for undergraduates. So I don't necessarily recommend that to students. So that would be, again, where I would go to if you're looking at schools, ask them. Or the other thing that I will do for incoming students is I will try to connect them with students that are already in the program that they're interested in.
Oh, okay.
And that way, like, I can tell you all day what I think that we're doing great, but you're gonna understand it better from the student side. So
yeah,
you can figure out from the student side what resources there are for you, what classes to avoid. Like, I've heard that Reddit is very popular in figuring that out, but, like, what classes to avoid, things like that. So I will go back to certifying officials, important people on campus, and then if you connect with them, then they'll be able to connect you with students in your program, and you'll be able to kind of get a better grasp of the school in general through talking to other students on that campus.
Oh, that's great. And then I think if a current service member asked me what they should look for in a military-friendly school, I think I would tell them, like, if your school has a designated space for veterans, like, it's a huge deal. Like, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but it's a huge deal. Like, if it wasn't there, I'd be either here at a Census Project, which is great, or Falk College. And, you know, but while those places, I like them, like, I'm way more comfortable in the veteran lounge because I can just lay down on the couch, don't even care. I could be, I could just speak the way I want and like act the way I want, act how I want, and it doesn't really matter. Like, obviously it matters how you act and speak, but like, it's just a little more wiggle room there because people come from a different type of community and they're not all straight from high school, and you have more of a freedom to speak how you want to speak about like real life scenarios. And then, so a veteran space is great, and like having certified officials at your school is fantastic. And then having veteran scholarships is great. But I think if the school has veteran scholarships, that means like they're putting their money in veterans, and they probably care about veterans, and they want you guys to succeed in some shape, way, or form or fashion. And if they have like a whole like some sort of like veteran counselors or stuff, something like that, just to be around, and like a whole just designated office for a veteran success in school would be like great. I know it's, it sounds like a lot, but like it's like two rooms essentially. Like
yeah, and I don't necessarily think that it's a lot. I think that like you said, you were hitting on the community of having those spaces for just you all. I think that having all those resources just makes your life easier. Higher education is not easy, especially with, you know, you're thinking about the community that you guys have. A lot of you have kids, you have wives. Like, we all have things outside of this. Like, you are not an 18-year-old that doesn't have any bills or any responsibilities. So it's nice to have that space with people who may or may not be in the same, like, life trajectory as you are, but they have been in the military, so they still have those experiences. And I would say that it is nice having our office set up the way it is between you guys with the lounge on one side of us and the quiet study area on the other, because I think the beneficial thing to that is that it's not just that we are staff in an office that when you need something that you come in and, you know, you check in with us. It's like we get to know you guys, we get to support you guys, and that's how we find out that you guys need other things. Like you guys are not always vocal about things that you need. You kind of keep it hidden sometimes. So if we know what you need, then we can advocate for you better across the university, not just in the spaces that you have, because, you know, I advocate for off-campus housing or seeing if we can get you guys any other grants or the bursar's office. Can we get this hold off even for 24 hours? Like, those are the things behind the scenes that we do.
Yeah, like I would say, like, look at a school that has these type of benefits, these type of, like, staff on, like, workers that care. Because I ran a scenario over the summer where the school, my school, like, flock of human dynamics, had to do a summer internship. But I only went to do the internship and use my benefits for 12 weeks. Yeah. But they wanted me to use it for, like, 20 weeks. I was like, man, I can't do that because I'm just going to waste, you know, 8 weeks of my benefits for no reason. And she did not comprehend that really at all. And not to her, because she was like, why would she understand veteran benefits? So I went to like Carrie, who is a certified official here at Syracuse University, and she was able to do the special, like, you could describe it, like how you just,
yeah, time slot. I think, what did we end up doing? We ended up doing like an, was it an independent study for you? Or
you
it
like
was,
a letter to like the VA saying that he's only been in school for this time.
Yeah, so saying that while your internship, maybe this full-time period, if we have a letter stating that you're only actively enrolled in classes for this time period. And that's just, we need documentation from the VA. So I've done that several times when I was working with the law school students. They have externships too. So I would do letters for them, and we just keep those on file, because at the end of the day, if the VA comes and audits us, then we have to be able to have a reason for why we certified the way we did. And so that was what we did, was, you know, getting this letter that this is the time frame. And like you said, people on campus don't understand that. They don't understand that you're spending more money or more entitlement the longer that the classes go. And especially with summer classes, like, I don't, this is just personal opinion, I don't necessarily like you all using your benefits during the summer, but that's just because, you know, for example, you, there's wonky dates during the summer. We have 6-week sessions, we have 8-week sessions, we have 12-week sessions. And mapping those out with students is, I mean, it's part of my job. It's just trying to figure out if you are dependent on that housing allowance, how we get you at full time, how we're going to maximize these benefits. And it's not always the best route to go. Like, if you need the housing allowance to be in full time, I get that. Like, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But if you're just trying to get one or two classes taken off your pile, like Onondaga Community College, go there for the summer. And like you said, either pay out of pocket or find a grant, because it's just, it's not the best use of your benefits to be here during the summer.
Yeah. Another thing, like when looking to a school, like see if it's military friendly, like see if they have an active student veteran organization. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of veterans, like you said, they're not very vocal about a lot of things to you guys, but yeah. Like, and the gratitude they have for student veteran organization is pretty insane. Like, they're like, I just want to come hang out with you guys. I want to have fun with you guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it definitely means going to mean more to some people more than others. Mm-hmm. Like me and my friend group, like, I'm personally pretty active on campus. I have a lot of friends who are, like, not veterans. And we, mm-hmm. like, would talk, we'll Fagans, whatever the case may be. And it's a fun time. Like, I encourage all veterans to get involved with traditional students. Because it's a fun time. Like, you're in college. Have fun.
Yeah.
Go to the games. Go to all the bars or whatever. But I know a lot of veterans are not that case because maybe they have kids. And mm-hmm. or maybe they're, like, a little older. They just don't want to hang out with people in their 20s. And, you know, it's fine. I totally respect that. Yeah. But, like, the student veteran organization, we do some amazing things. Besides, like, volunteering, we go to, like, the Meadowbrook, which yeah. is Syracuse's own cabin in the Adirondacks, which is, like, in the woods and by a lake. And those type of things are, like, it's a fun time. The school paid for it. All right, yeah. We didn't pay, as student veterans, we didn't pay a single dime out of our pocket. So when you're looking at schools, check out their Instagram. Check out their student veteran organization and see what their kind of events they're doing. Are they funded? Are they doing events? Or are they just... haven't posted in 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, if they haven't posted in like a couple of years, that means they're probably not active. They don't really care. The e-board doesn't really care about creating events. Or maybe they care, but they don't have the staff to back them up to fund some of the events or help, you know, spread the word out.
Yeah. And so this is, I don't know how well known this fact is. And I tell, you know, my veteran friends that go to other schools, like I know I've had these conversations when I'm trying to get people that I know that are in, you know, a different state, they're taking classes like go to NatCon, for example. So the Student Veterans of America, they have a national conference every year that gets these student veterans to these sessions to learn about these different things like how you can leverage your organizations on campus or how you can fundraise, things like that. So the little known fact is that schools get paid to have student veterans at their universities or colleges. And I don't mean just by, you know, tuition and fees. We get what's called annual reporting fees. So I would say also when you're looking at schools, ask them what they spend their annual reporting fees on. So the annual reporting fees, and this is the number that I previously knew, you get about $16 per every student that's using benefits at the school. And so that has to go into a separate fund, and that fund can be used for decorating a student veteran lounge, getting you guys food to put in there, hosting tailgates. We can also use it to support us in going to conferences, things like that. So as long as it's veteran connected, like I've gotten confirmation from the VA that we can use it for scholarships. We're not in a position where we can do that yet.
We also don't have to because
SU has yeah, money for yeah, veterans. Like, yeah, my wish list for it is that we can start up a graduate scholarship, because that's the other thing.
That's one of the few downfalls here.
I love the support that our students get at the undergraduate level. However, seeing graduate accounts on a regular basis, that's my wish list, is that we can get a scholarship started for graduate students, because that's usually when you guys need the most money. Yeah. Because if you've already done undergraduate and you're rolling into graduate, if you're just using post 9/11, you're not using chapter 31, where that's part of your academic plan is to go into a master's, then you might not have much entitlement remaining and you have to figure that out. And that's part of the process that we do. But I'm like, graduate school is so demanding too. It's a completely different beast than undergrad. So even just something like $2,000, like,
yeah,
too. Because you also lose the veteran housing grant at the graduate level. Yeah. You don't have that anymore. So
Yeah, no, that one sucks. So you spoke at NatCon. NatCon is an amazing time. This year, until 2024, January, it'll be in hosted in Nashville. If you are a student of an organization, if you're thinking about going to college, ask them if they go to NatCon. Like, if they go to NatCon, that means they're probably pretty good. Like, because it's not cheap. Well, you should fundraise all year to go to NatCon, like, organization. We met some schools that the school said we'll pay for 10 people's registration, but you guys have to get there themselves, yourselves, and, you know, find the Airbnb.
Yeah.
And, you know, lucky we go to Syracuse, where they pretty much pay for every single thing for us. And, you know, we're pretty grateful for that. But if you're not, if you don't go to Syracuse for some reason, find a way to fundraise. Find a way to get there somehow, because it's totally worth it. You meet a lot of people from a lot of different schools. You learn about different scholarships. You learn about different programs. And you learn how to, like, if you want to apply in grad school, you learn about different grad schools and what schools offer what and things you will never know. And just a huge networking event that I highly recommend all veterans attend if you just crawl your way there somehow.
Yeah, I would agree. And that's why I hit on the annual reporting fees, because they can use that funding. Like,
yeah, I had no idea that was a thing.
Yeah, most students, it's a behind-the-scenes thing. Yeah. So that's why I knew. I was like, this is going to floor you. Yeah. I haven't already hurt your brain yet.
I'm definitely going to call my buddy who goes to school in California, because he really wants to go to NatCon. I'm like, bro, ask your advisor what the hell they do with this.
Yeah, the annual reporting fees. And, like, they've got to have funding somewhere. So what I did last year was, I have a friend that he is out in a school in Michigan, and he ended up, it's a small school, he's going to be a doctor, but he ended up being this, you know, his SVO's president. I'm like, you at a minimum should be going to NatCon. And he ended up advocating for himself and got to go. And so even if it's one, like, I know back in the day before Syracuse did all the fundraising, like, you guys get to go. We get to send 14 of you this year because they do, our development team does so much fundraising. So that's donors outside or inside the university sending that money to Syracuse to support you guys through, you know, the Veteran Legacy Fund, so that you all can go to NatCon and have to pay minimal out-of-pocket costs. So some schools don't have that same support, so annual reporting fees can help that. We used to just have it so that at a minimum, it was only the executive board for the SVO that was going. And then, you know, right before COVID, we were able, I think we got 20 students one year that were able to go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we've had to cut back a little bit, but, you know, it's just advocating for yourself. If you know, the funding has got to be somewhere, even if they can just pay for travel or registration, because registration is like $500 for NatCon. It's not cheap.
It's not cheap, yeah.
No, but, I mean, you think about, you're getting 3 days of these networking events and sit-ins that you're getting to listen to people speak. Just, I would say, like, the exhibitor hall that they have for NatCon alone, like, you can talk to government agencies, the three-letter organizations. Yeah. Boeing is a big supporter of NatCon. Disney, they just, you know, did a partnership with Disney. So even to get your foot in the door there is a big deal. You will have so many more doors open for you to get there.
Yeah, and that report's $16 a semester or a year?
For what? It's per semester, but I think they pay it out all at one time.
Okay.
So for us, we get a good chunk of change because we have our resident and graduate students that we get money for. So
wow, it's amazing. Yeah. So I just want to wrap it up a little bit. We said a lot of great things. You really opened my eyes, I think, to whoever hears as well, mm-hmm. on, like, how to look at schools for military friendly, how to apply for these benefits, or, like, why you should apply and how to maximize them, or stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm about to ask every guest here, like, what is your favorite quote and why?
I told Keith Doss, so he's the director of our office, I told him that this is going to be my quote because it's what I use all the time. And he was like, don't do this. I'm like, yes, I have logic for it. So my favorite quote, it's ridiculous, is if you can't be a good example, be a horrible warning. And I love that quote because even with all the stories that I've told you, like, I was an idiot at 18 years old. I had to figure all this stuff out the hard way. And then I went into the military and I did that the wrong way. And, like, I've just done all these things that maybe they're not the best ideas, but hey, you guys can learn from me and see, like, this is what you shouldn't maybe do. And it, you know, it's been a fun ride along the way, but, you know, if I can cause you a little less pain, then just take it from me. Don't be a horrible warning like myself.
Yeah, well, no, we greatly appreciate all the warnings and help along the way from here, from the student veterans from Syracuse University. I also realized after I said it in the beginning of the podcast, my major and everything, I just took my last final yesterday as undergrad.
Yay!
So you're my last guest here as my undergrad student. That's crazy. Yeah.
I feel so special. Like,
yeah,
like,
so oh man. Like, to be here. Yeah.
Is it scary?
Yeah, I mean, it came and gone really fast. It's kind of insane, like how. To me, I thought college was the military. Like, I thought this was amazing. It was really fun. I got paid to learn. I got paid to meet, make friends and make memories. And this is a fun time. Like, I highly recommend every service member go to college. Like, I loved all the moments. Yeah, tests are hard, and you know, there's ups and downs. But you know, I broke my leg through my undergrad, and I couldn't walk for a year. And yet, like, I still wouldn't change the experience for the world. Like, I loved it. I loved the environment. I love all my friends I made. And you know, I'll never forget the friends I made that I deployed with and all that. But
yeah.
And college was a fun time. Get involved, have fun, meet people, and really, I feel as enlisted, you think you're limited as enlisted, and you come out here like you're not. Like, mm-hmm. You could do anything you want. You don't have to say, you don't have to be a yes man anymore, a yes woman anymore. You could be who you really want to be. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get rid of that mindset. Extremely hard. I was talking to like a president, John Nipper, like, the whole how the military like brainwashes people at such a young age as enlisted, like, no matter what, you say yes, an officer, no matter what. It's very hard to get rid of it. But I'm working on it, a bunch of us are working on it, and like, man, you get to see the difference in us. Our confidence has boosted, and it's a fun time. Yeah. And but like, I really greatly appreciate you coming out here and like explaining to us and like just being like a staff member, like on our side, but working with us to like reach our goals and helping us and explain to us the process that, you know, in the transition class of the military, we didn't learn it. Like,
yeah, I think we talked about it a couple of days ago, was that, you know, my seminar that it was changed to TRS, the Transition Readiness Seminar. And it was like, I was already working on a master's while I was on active duty. So I was using TA, and getting out and having to figure out my benefits, it was just like, I didn't know what I was doing. And then I started working at Syracuse, and then my position opened up because they were expanding, and I had no idea what a school certifying official was. I knew I had one at a different school, but I really just didn't know what it entailed. And that's the problem, is that the transition part of getting out of the military is not as solid as how they break you down and transform you when you're going in. It's a very big difference.
It's huge, yeah. And it's, like you said, it's, take some time, but you get through it.
Yes.
Yeah. But thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, and thank you for having time me.
And explaining all this to us.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I hurt my brain again just talking about it, so I hope I didn't hurt everyone else's that much.
Awesome. Thank you.